Welcome to the Narracast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, and we've got a packed show today.
We're looking at a major release out of China's AI sector that is making some massive claims about parameter counts and agent coordination. Plus, another stark reminder about what it actually means to buy digital media.
We also have updates on OnePlus exiting Western markets, a retrospective on the golden era of music piracy, and a quick look at how developers are customizing their AI coding environments.
But let's start with the AI race. Moonshot AI just dropped a new frontier model that is demanding the industry's attention.
Let's get into it. On July 16, 2026, Chinese startup Moonshot AI officially released Kimi K3, and the raw numbers they are pushing here are staggering. We're looking at a model with approximately 2.8 trillion parameters and a 1 million token context window.
That parameter count is massive. For context, Moonshot AI is positioning Kimi K3 as a direct challenger to Western frontier models, like Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.8. The narrative for a while has been that Chinese AI labs are trailing US labs by about 8 to 12 months. Moonshot is clearly trying to signal that the gap is closing, if not entirely closed.
Right, but the sheer size of the model isn't even the most interesting part of this release. It's the architecture they've built on top of it. Kimi K3 introduces what they're calling agent swarm technology.
This is where the industry is clearly heading. We're moving away from single-prompt chatbots and toward autonomous, multi-agent systems. With Agent Swarm, Kimi K3 can coordinate up to 300 sub-agents for parallel task execution.
Think about what 300 parallel sub-agents actually means for a developer workflow. If you give Kimi K3 a complex prompt, say refactoring a massive legacy code base, it doesn't just read the code sequentially. It theoretically spins up dozens of agents to analyze different modules simultaneously, while another set of agents writes tests, and a coordinator agent stitches it all back together.
Exactly. The big question is whether that coordination is actually effective, or if it devolves into a noisy, hallucination-prone mess. Coordinating 300 agents requires an incredibly robust orchestrator model. If the sub-agents lose context or drift from the core objective, you're just burning compute.
Speaking of burning compute, let's talk about the API pricing. Moonshot has set the API at $3 per million input tokens and $15 per million output tokens.
For a 2.8 trillion parameter model, that is highly competitive pricing. It undercuts several of the top-tier US models. If the reasoning capabilities actually match Claude Opus 4.8, that pricing structure makes Kimi K3 a very attractive option for enterprise applications that require heavy agentic workflows.
But there is a catch, and it's causing some friction in the open source community. Leading up to this release, there were widespread rumors that Kimi K3 was going to have an open weight release.
Yeah, and that didn't happen. At launch, there was no official model card and no downloadable weights. It's strictly available via the Kimi web platform, their mobile apps, and the API. It raises questions about Moonshot's broader strategy. Are they pivoting away from open source to protect their intellectual property now that they've reached frontier-level scale? Or is it a safety and alignment issue where they want to tightly control how a 2.8 trillion parameter model is deployed?
It's likely a mix of both. Running a model of this size locally isn't exactly feasible for the average developer anyway. But the lack of a model card is disappointing. Researchers want to know what data this was trained on and how the agent swarm orchestration is actually weighted.
Regardless of the open weight debate, Kimi K3 is a statement piece. It proves that the capital and the engineering talent in the Chinese AI sector are capable of producing models that rival the best out of Silicon Valley. The next few months of benchmark testing and real-world developer feedback are going to be critical to see if Agent Swarm is a gimmick or the new standard.
Moving from the bleeding edge of AI to the frustrating reality of digital media ownership. If you are a PlayStation user in the UK or Europe, you need to check your digital library. Effective September 1st, 2026, Sony is removing 551 movies and TV shows from user accounts.
And to be clear, these aren't titles included in a subscription service like Netflix. These are movies and shows that users explicitly paid for. They clicked a button that said buy, handed over their money, and now Sony is just wiping them from their hard drives.
The removals are due to the expiration of a content licensing agreement between Sony and the distributor Studio Canal. And adding insult to injury, Sony has stated they will not be offering any refunds or compensation to the affected users.
This is unfortunately a recurring pattern. We saw this exact same thing happen in 2022 with other Studio Canal content, and again in 2023 with Discovery content. The core issue here is the illusion of digital ownership. When you click buy on a digital storefront, you aren't actually buying the media. You are buying a highly restrictive, revocable license to view that media, contingent on corporate agreements you have no part in.
What makes this particular round of deletion so poignant is the timing. Sony recently announced that starting in January 2028, they will stop producing physical game discs entirely. So they are aggressively pushing their user base toward an all-digital future while simultaneously demonstrating exactly why an all-digital future is so precarious.
It's a massive contradiction. You can't tell consumers that physical media is dead and they need to embrace digital libraries, and then periodically nuke those libraries without compensation because a boardroom negotiation fell through. It fundamentally erodes consumer trust.
This exact friction is starting to catch the attention of lawmakers. California recently passed AB 2426, which essentially targets false advertising in digital storefronts. It forces companies to be transparent that consumers are only buying a license, not the actual media, unless they provide a permanent offline copy.
And that's a necessary step, but it doesn't solve the broader issue of digital preservation. If platforms aren't legally required to maintain access to purchased content and physical media is being phased out, we are looking at a scenario where significant cultural artifacts just disappear from the public sphere.
Exactly. If a movie is only available digitally and the distributor pulls it from all storefronts, it functionally ceases to exist for the average person. It places the burden of preservation entirely on digital archivists and, let's be honest, software pirates, which is a wild position for the industry to put itself in.
For the users losing these 551 Studio Canal titles on September 1st, the warning is clear. If you care about a piece of media, you need to own it in a format that a corporation can't reach into your living room and turn off.
Speaking of digital preservation and piracy, our first roundup item is a retrospective on the era of private BitTorrent trackers.
Right. This piece focuses on the cultural void left behind by sites like What.cd, which closed back in 2016, and its predecessor, Oink. These weren't just piracy hubs. They were incredibly meticulous, community-driven music archives.
It's fascinating to look back on. Even Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails famously called Oink the world's greatest record store because of its organization and audio quality. It actually pushed him to release the 2008 album The Slip for free via BitTorrent.
The music industry blamed piracy for a 62% revenue decline between 2000 and 2010. But looking at the sterilized, algorithmic streaming landscape we have today, it's hard not to feel like we lost a really unique form of community-curated discovery along the way.
All right, let's hit a couple more stories real quick before we wrap up.
Sounds good.
OnePlus has officially announced it is concluding new product rollouts in North America and Europe, effectively exiting those markets after more than a decade.
It's the end of an era for the former flagship killer. Existing devices will still get updates, but users will have to voluntarily switch from OxygenOS to ColorOS following the release of ColorOS 17.
If you're an active user on the OnePlus community forums for the US or Europe, take note. Those forums are being shut down on August 16, 2026. You need to manually save any content or guides you want to keep before that date.
With parent company Oppo facing financial strain and rising component costs, the US and European smartphone markets are just becoming too hostile for brands outside the Apple and Samsung duopoly. Finally, a quick look at the Claude Code Repository. Issue 78203 is requesting a new command line flag to set the session prompt bar color right at launch.
Right now, developers have to manually run the /color command after a session starts. If you're running multiple concurrent sessions in split panes in VS Code, you want to be able to visually distinguish them automatically. The request asks for either a --color CLI flag or a Claude session color environment variable. It's a small quality of life feature, but it speaks to how power users are actually deploying this tool.
Exactly. It shows developers are treating Claude code not just as a one-off utility, but as a persistent multi-session environment that needs that classic Unix-like scriptability.
That's all for today's briefing. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with more deep dives and updates from across the tech landscape. Stay curious.